Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of reimaginedonline.org, covering the stories in the new world of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks to Pennsylvania State Senator Scott Martin, chair of the Pennsylvania Senate Education Committee. The two discuss the education choice landscape in Pennsylvania after the last legislative session, where the Keystone State's Educational Improvement Tax Credit Program was expanded to the tune of $40 million, and new pathways to charter school authorizers were created. What does the future hold for education choice in Pennsylvania? That question and more on this episode of Podcast Ed. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
You know, in Pennsylvania, we have about, I think, 1.7 million public school students, and our budget's about $13.9 billion. I think we bounce back and forth between 6th to 8th in terms of all the states in terms of what we spend on public education. We also have about 230,000 kids that go to private related schools, Catholic schools, charter schools, you know, things of that nature. And what I usually try to judge my goals on, and especially they were kind of inflated during the pandemic, is I typically try to look at the families that tried to access a better opportunity for their children, whether it was because the program really didn't meet their individual needs, whether it was because of the pandemic, as I'm sure you're aware up here. Some of the places where we had the longest closed schools were the places probably in the roughest areas that need those kids needed that anchor in their life the most. Right. So when we were looking at the statistics, we had about 43,000 families who last year during COVID, who tried to access an alternate form of education for their child, you know, whether they're told because their school said it was too dangerous to open. And meanwhile, the Catholic school or the charter school across the street from the public school was open. And I used that as a gauge. And in that gauge, that was about probably a third of our kids who apply for the educational improvement tax credit who didn't have access, which is really disheartening when you think about the fact that there was more than enough money in terms of private entities or individuals who wanted to donate to that tax credit program, but because of our caps, we couldn't. And so, you know, we looked at our OSTC program, and that had about half the students who had applied, which was about 18,000 total, who didn't get it. So when I was going into this year, having a divided government, right? Governor who was more focused on just more money to public education, and not meeting the needs of these kids, I tried to create something to negotiate. And the bill had many pieces in it. It had not only the financial piece. I was actually seeking $100 million so we could get all those families and kids the choice that they believed was in the best interest of their child, but also had pieces in it. You know, the governor had been playing games for a long time. There's something the state has called the Charter Appeals Board. So if a local school district, who in essence is looking at their competition and saying, you're not approved to offer this choice, this program for our kids, they could appeal to this charter commission. Well, the governor had nobody on the charter commission. That was his way of dealing with that issue, was not staffing it, so they couldn't do business. So I had pieces in my legislation to create a new charter appeal system to leverage him. And wouldn't you know it, in the negotiations, he ended up staffing the Charter Appeals Board. Of course, the big thing was the EITC money versus what his ask was in terms of funding basic education, K-12 public education in Pennsylvania. So, you know, I knew there was going to be give and take. I knew I was putting things in that I never thought he would sign on the surface. I had things in to kind of sweeten it a little bit, you know, to try to, you know, so much money going through a new basic education fair funding formula, you know. Okay. But at the end of the day, though I'm happy we got, I think it was the second highest increase in Pennsylvania history to $40 million to add in, that's not going to cover all the families. And so I know our work's not done yet. We'll be right back at it, because before you know it, you know, we'll be preparing for another budget season. But that's how I typically look at, are we meeting the needs of those who are really seeking it and actively engaged in seeking it? For me, that's the bare minimum of what we should be doing to ensure our kids have educational opportunities that are right for them.
Can we give a little bit of context to the folks around the country who may not know all the various nuances about Pennsylvania in terms of what the choice options are? I know you have charter schools,
yep.
You have cyber charters, and you mentioned the ETIC.
Well, yeah, the EITC and the OSTC are basically private. They're mechanisms that families can use to pay tuition to go to a Catholic school, another private related institution. And what happens is the institution goes out and goes to a business, goes to an individual, and gets them to donate money. And then that business or individual gets a tax credit with the state. And so right now, I believe correctly, and I want to give you the exact number, the EITC is now up to $225 million.
Wow. We
also have cyber charter schools here in Pennsylvania. We have other independent schools that are here. So we have many different ones. It's fun, finding the funding to give families this choice has been the difficult part in battling with this governor.
So I want to talk about the charters just for a second. So in Pennsylvania, primarily the authorizer has been a local school board.
Yes.
You did have a state commission, but the governor wasn't really staffing it. So basically, part of what you wanted to do is give charter applicants an option beyond the local school district, because as people say around the country, asking the school board to approve, it's sort of like asking McDonald's to approve a Burger King down the street, and they tend not to want to do that. So that was a big issue, right?
It was a huge issue, and one we heard a lot about. I mean, we had appeals that have been going on, or charters waiting for the renewals, or charters for years. It's like, let's wait them out. We're going to play the delay game. We also have school districts, namely down in Philadelphia. It was basically getting these charter entities to waive their due process rights to appeal to the charter board, saying you can do X, Y, Z, but you have to give up your ability to seek due process if you don't like what we do with you. It's called the surrender clause. And we were trying to ban that in this as well. I hate to say we did not get that through in the negotiations. So, and it's sad because in that area of the state, that's where some of the biggest needs, these are the kids whose families are showing up at lotteries, right? Literally pulling balls out to see who gets the opportunity to basically lift themselves up and get out of a failing school. And it's heartbreaking to even think that we have a system like that. And that's where we have the most resistance into it. So, there's a lot of wonderful entities on the ground, the African American Charter Coalition there, and others who have literally dedicated their lives to getting as many of these opportunities for kids across the board. And getting them out of failing, they're trapped in a zip code. They may have a failing school, and it's just not right.
So let's talk a little bit more about the politics. You mentioned that a lot of the kids that are being served by your programs are kids in inner cities, oftentimes low-income families, oftentimes minority kids. The data suggests those kids don't always do very well in school, and you're trying to give them more options. It's also true, frankly, that a lot of those families tend to vote Democratic, and yet in Pennsylvania, Republicans like yourself are taking the lead to try to serve those families, and a Democratic governor is fighting to block those families to have access to additional choice. So it seems weird. How do we move forward? How do we build a bipartisan coalition? You would think helping children get educated would be something that everybody right. would agree on, and you wouldn't. And it's kind of this weird thing in multiple states where Republicans are taking the lead, advocating for families that you think Democrats would be advocating for also. So how do we move forward? What's your thinking on that?
You bring up a really good point because, and I have a colleague who often says a lot of times the fight, I'm from Lancaster County. And, we have wonderful public schools here too. I went to Lancaster Catholic, my entire life I went to Catholic schools, but we still have really good public schools here. We often say that we're doing this for another area's children outside our district.
Right.
Because we know it makes a difference. The irony of what's been going on is, especially over the last year, where system fairness, equality, things like that have been really thrown about. And, you know, that applies when we talk about reforming the criminal justice system or other systems. I have legitimately have conversations with colleagues who have told me, too, is like, this should be the biggest civil rights issue that we're focused on. You know, a child, many of them who are children of color, who are trapped in a zip code that has a failing school where they live, and you're trying to give them an opportunity to lift themselves up. And we can see it works because the ones, the limited ones that do get the opportunity have just done tremendous in terms of their development, in terms of going to college, getting good jobs. It's really ironic they fight us on this. However, as you may know, I mean, there's special interests out there who are continually fighting back against providing that equitable treatment or equitable opportunity. To hear things like we went through in this past budget cycle, even hearing talking points like the educational improvement tax credit takes money away from the general appropriation from the state to the schools, which is a complete lie. You know, they have to go out and raise this money, right? It doesn't come out of our state appropriation. We're giving historic amounts of money in the state. So when I hear them revert to that and see them go to that lengths, when we're really trying to help kids who absolutely need it the most, they often, and having a governor here in Pennsylvania, I find the irony in he always wants to go after the choice schools, the charter schools, the cyber charters about quality, right? He'll never breathe a word about the quality of the public K through 12 schools. And that, you know, on our side, we can admit that we have very good public schools, but we also have some very bad performing public schools. I know that we have good charters and there's some that aren't so great. You know, some may even say about other type of independent schools or Catholic schools, but you need to apply those rules fairly across the board. It's obvious they don't think you should apply those same standards, that the answer is always just give us more money and we'll fix it. Well, we're giving you historic amounts of money. And not only that, you tend to get a lot more money than your suburban counterparts and your rural counterparts. And it's still not lifting these kids out or giving them the opportunities that they need. So that's a very frustrating piece of this. But I will say, I think we make progress every year. And I really long for the day that we have a governor who also believes in providing those same kids, especially in those rural urban core areas where there might have not the best educational institutions, the equitable opportunity that so many other kids have. And I think where you're from in Florida, I have personal friends who, you know, have been here in Pennsylvania. And I just think of one in particular with daughter with severe Asperger's, could not open up, was not getting the services she needed in her home school district, public school district here. They moved to Florida. And the day they became Florida residents, they found a performing arts school that actually worked with a lot of kids that had these learning disabilities or, in her case, with Asperger's. I saw the young lady about 5 months ago, not even the same girl, has totally flourished, loved school, loved the performing arts, and really made a difference in her life. And that's what I truly hope we can move to that kind of model someday. And someday we will have a governor that supports that too.
Yeah, we have a scholarship program just for those kids. I think we'll have about 21 or 22,000 kids this year on that scholarship. Yeah, it's one of the most moving parts of my job because we have kids with Down syndrome, autism, spina bifida, and those families are amazing. I mean, I'm a parent. I have two kids, and it was hard enough for just two average everyday kids. I can't imagine a kid with those kind of challenges. I mean, those families are just amazing, and to be able to help them is a true blessing for us. So
well, and you know, and here's a really good point because you kind of building off what you said is the opposition often wants to frame this as we need to leave religion out of schools. This is just about sending kids to religious schools, right? I hear that talking point over and over again. When reality is, these are kids who have sometimes some severe disabilities. These are kids sometimes that have experienced horrendous bullying and need to be moved to another environment. There's all these different reasons families may want to seek a different educational opportunity. And beyond just whether the school might be failing or not, the environment may not be right for them in their social development or their mental health or a disability. And that's what often gets lost in these conversations.
Yeah, when we poll our families, number one thing they say is safety. And they mean physical safety, but also they mean emotional safety. You know, you want to be in an environment where you feel good, where you feel safe. Yeah. And sometimes that is a small Catholic school or a larger Catholic school where, right. you know, or sometimes it's an arts program, or sometimes it's sort of a back to basics, you know, program. Every kid is unique. Every kid is different. And as you know, when families sit around the kitchen table and make these decisions, they aren't political decisions.
No.
They are parent decisions, and they don't care. The politics is meaningless to them. So you always hear people saying this is a political plot to do something or other.
No.
It's just a human plot to help humans raise their children.
Well, if there's anything this the pandemic also taught us, because, you know, we're dealing with a learning loss, perhaps from the last year, that we finally did pass a bill in Pennsylvania that gave parents the sole ability to have their child to repeat a grade if they felt their child did not receive it. Surprisingly, and actually I'm grateful that that actually passed pretty unanimously through the General Assembly, and the governor signed it. But most importantly, you brought parents who are sitting around the table making these kind of decisions. They are active in their children's lives. They see there's a reason why they believe there needs to be a change, you know, and that's what I will always, and no one could ever ask this, when I say to any official, I say, who's the ultimate form of accountability when it comes to education? Right. And to me, it's the parents. It's the parents know what's working for their child, what's not working for their child. And we need to respect that, because ultimately, you know, on every aspect of their life, as long as they're under their roof or they're responsible for them, they want to see what's in their best interest. They know if something's harming them or not motivating them. And if the quicker we get to that as a society, not just in Pennsylvania, but across the entire country, all our kids will be so much better off for it.
Yeah, the other thing that we see in Florida a lot is it transforms the whole family. About every couple months, I hear a story about a grandmother who is raising a grandchild on the scholarship program. That child's life gets transformed, and the grandmother is so excited about what she sees, she goes back to school to start working on her GED.
Oh,
I got to tell you, that breaks my heart. But, you know, it brings joy to my heart, I guess. But it's about hope, right? When they're hopeless, why try? Because it's hopeless.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have hope and you can actually see the difference happening, then it inspires people to act. So I think a lot of what you're doing, Senator, is you're giving people hope, and that hope will be transformational.
Well, you know, and I tell this as kind of a funny story, but also to show the way not to do it is when I was growing, I was the oldest of seven kids and came from a relatively poor family. But my mom and dad, who were both from Philadelphia originally, wanted us to have a certain type of learning environment that was right for us. And now back then, we didn't have these scholarship programs. You know, you remember, I was a child of the late 70s and through the 80s. I graduated high school in 1990. In order to go to Catholic school, I basically spent so many summers of my youth scrubbing wax on floors, washing windows, buffing floors, doing landscaping to help pay off. I took loans. And to me, though, it might have, in terms of my development, taught me a lot about, you know, working hard to accomplish something or, you know, having that discipline. Our kids shouldn't be held to that. It shouldn't take that, because my parents were paying their property taxes and their taxes for education. But in order for them to get the one I thought I need, I had to engage basically in labor. Now, the funny part is, after I graduated Lancaster Catholic, I got a letter in the mail saying I still owed like 4 hours of window washing. So I had to go back and do that. But I will say, to do that for all my brothers and sisters, seven of us, there was a real belief. My mom thought there was wanted us to learn the environment. I would never change that for the world in hindsight, you know, in what it did for me. I want kids to have those same opportunities, but without the window washing and without the wax scrubbing.
Right. So let's talk about the future. You made a tremendous amount of progress this session. Talk about what you like to do moving forward. What are the additional improvements you like to make to the choice programs in Pennsylvania?
There's a couple different things. First and foremost, and I mentioned earlier how I gauge things is based on the need. I want to get that. What we did this year probably covers a little less than half of the families that needed the opportunity. So out of that 43,000, less than half of these dollars will go to help. So we're going to continue to push for another sizable increase to help cover that. However, what we also want to do is, especially seeing what we learned, you know, there was a 40% increase in cyber charter throughout the pandemic. How many of them, was that just a matter of convenience? Do they come back? Do they discover, wow, this really works. My kid thrived in this.
Right.
So we're going to build a lot off of what we see there. But there's mechanism issues. And what I mean by that is for years we fought for an escalator in the EITC program, meaning that if a school is able to raise more money than what the cap is, that it, and they have a 90% enrollment rate, that it could allow them to go 25% higher automatically to be able to, you know, to meet the need. It's matching up the demand of the students and the families with the charitable giving of these organizations. Increasing the caps of how much can go per student, I think would go a long way in helping a lot who are economically disadvantaged. So there's all these little mechanisms that we like to work on. And as far as the charter world, we're going to keep working on that the issues with the surrender clauses down in Philly, that'll continue to be a push. But I my hopes aren't high on a lot of these with the governor, but boy, are we going to keep trying.
Yeah, that escalator you mentioned is when we have in Florida. We've had it since around 2010, I think. And it allowed us to go from about $200 million to almost $800 million. Over that time. Yeah. So and having to go back every session to get the cap increase is really difficult. So that's why the automatic escalator, and it's demand driven, like you said. So if demand is there, then it goes up. If the demand's not there, then it doesn't go up. But every year we've been able to the demand's been driving it. So it's all family driven.
And we also want to focus on and, you know, in today's world, dual enrollment. Having an entity be able to donate to a school that supports a child, but then they could also give to like a career and technology related center that also supports what that child's doing. There's all these little things that we're going to try to do to increase opportunities for our kids.
Well, that's fantastic. And I want to tell you how much the rest of the country has admired what you're doing. I've watched some of your testimony in committees, and you're a very articulate advocate and very passionate advocate. Very ethical advocate, I think, and you conduct yourself with a lot of dignity on the floor and on your committee. And I know you're the chair of the Senate Education Committee, and I've watched a lot of how that works. And I just want to tell you how much people around the country appreciate what you're doing and want to say thank you.
Well, that means a lot to me. You know, it's something that really I believe is one of the most important issues that we can be working on, because we all talk about how we want to hand off a better future to our kids, right? And give them the best opportunities. And this, to me, is one of the most important things I think in my public service career that we can do, is helping to meet those needs for those families.